So welcome to the very next episode, episode 34. We're going to do a little bit of a cold open thing where we talk about technical difficulties.
Yeah, we spent, what, the last 15 minutes trying to figure out why I sounded like a chipmunk?
Right, and we're not sure, but if people would prefer to hear Jed in a much higher, you know, the squeakquel, we could do that. We would have no problem doing that.
I would have some problem with it, John. You know, I have a brand. I have a personal vision that I want people to have of me, and it is not a high-pitched chipmunk.
Well, as I was saying earlier, welcome to episode 34 of Foul Territory. I'm John Sumple. He's Jed Rigney.
I am Jed Rigney.
And we're here to bring a whole bunch of stuff to you in regards to baseball, a little pop culture, and a new segment coming up a little bit later that will, you know, intrigue and enthrall some of our listeners. But more on that later. Why am I doing such a soft voice?
I don't know, but it's very sexy.
It's the morning show with Jed and John.
Yeah, we're all turned on. We all got morning wood.
We're good. yes, it's the third week in a row that we have recorded before noon on the East Coast and before 9 a.m. on the West Coast, and brought to you by Folgers Coffee.
I'm a Starbucks guy myself. Actually, you know what I do is, and people are going to love to know this detail of my life, is what I do is I buy the coffee vias, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the best, wherever I can get them for the best bargain, right? And of course, we'll find like whether Target's having a sale or whether Starbucks sometimes has sales or where you can buy in bulk online. Anyway, I take those and then I add a bunch of milk to it. I make my own iced latte at home.
Nice.
Yeah, it's very delicious.
Do you double up on the packs or just one is enough?
No, just one's enough.
One's enough?
One's enough.
I've never tried those. I'll have to try that.
Yeah. It's a delicious treat.
Pop some water in the microwave.
Okay,
or do you boil
so
water?
Listen up. Okay, so here's what you do: run a little hot water into a cup. I know tap water is the devil. Blah blah blah. Whatever. But it's got to be warm water. Otherwise, it doesn't dissolve right. Right, and then you get this clumpy whatever. Right, because all these dissolvable things don't dissolve in cold water; they dissolve in warm water. So you have to get a little warm water in there. Just I'm talking about a finger, as the bartender would say.
Okay.
Or two fingers, as Lena Dunham would say. Hey-o. Anyway, that's so gross. Anyway, I don't know why I had to make it gross, but I made it gross. Then I add a little bit of, I use stevia. Is that it?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's the most natural of the sugar.
Sweeteners. Right.
Anyway, and then I just pour in milk the rest of the way. And it is delicious. Little ice cubes, keep it fresh.
So that little of water with that, so dissolve that, so a little bit of water with the coffee, so it's really, really rich coffee, and then you add the milk.
Yes.
Ah.
So you're basically turning the Via packet into an espresso shot.
Right. So is it, do you steam it? How do you make it hot?
It's an iced latte.
Oh, iced latte. Gotcha.
Yeah.
I'm all over that. I'm going to have to, you know, listen to this later. Which I usually don't do, but I'll have to listen to this, write that down, and try it out. That sounds. Is there a specific flavor of Starbucks?
I feel Columbia is the best brand, but it is nice when you do Columbia for a while and then you branch out to the I think Verdana or Veranda.
It's a little variety.
Yeah, you
variety
mix it up a little
then.
Bit. Some of the blondes. You want to mix in some blondes,
right? Gotcha.
Especially if you're in California.
Very nice.
Oh, that's a joke.
Isn't there nothing but blondes in California?
You know, I will say, I live in New York now. There are a lot less blondes in New York than there are in California. But that's okay.
And a lot less tank tops, braless tank tops, and short shorts, I'm sure, too, right?
I think in the summer, it's actually about the same. But I will say, the one great thing about New York is that I'm much better looking here, which may be reason enough for me to stay.
And you also have the you're about to experience the August aroma of the city on fire.
Well, don't be surprised, John. Don't be surprised if, like the winter that we had, which was very delicate, that we wind up having a delicate summer.
You're not getting the roastery effect of the garbage on the sidewalks?
That's my wish.
Well, it might be coming soon. Well, now that we're 5.5 minutes into the coffee talk. in the streets of New York and technical difficulties. Maybe we should jump into a little bit. Well, actually, I notice here that there
is a PSA.
A PSA.
Yeah.
So before we jump into headlines, let's hear the PSA.
All right, John. Sometimes we save this space for our advertisers. Over the years have included things like Rugned Odor's Rough Odor Deodorant, Marlon Byrd's Career Extension Workshop, and the College World Series a couple of times. But this time, we want to do a public service announcement. All right, you ready? I'm just reading copy here. This is what they told me to read.
Okay.
Being a pitcher for a Major League Baseball team would be a dream come true for many. The thrill and glory of competition at its highest level. But for some, this dream can turn into a nightmare. For some, like Pirates' young pitching sensation and recently testicularly cancered Jameson Taillon, their manager is Clint Hurdle, a festering blemish on the face of an enlightened sport. When he was replaced in Colorado by Jim Tracy, yes, that Jim Tracy, the team made it to the World Series. That's how much they hated Clint Hurdle. Then Hurdle went to the Pirates, and he embraced new baseball ideologies like defensive shifts, and we thought it would be okay. But as the dog doth returneth to his own vomit, so does the Clint to his folly. Now he is determined to ruin Jameson's career by leaving him in games too long when he clearly doesn't have his stuff, and something must be done. Hold on, I got a little sound effect.
Festering blemish.
Like, I wrote that this morning.
That's good. And I was waiting for something along the lines of that, because you were pretty amped up about that 2 weeks ago, I believe it was.
Yeah, I did that whole tirade 2 weeks ago, and what does he do? Literally the next outing,
same thing.
He does the same thing to him. The guy's got a blister or something, and then the next outing, Jameson Taillon is pitching well. He gets through six innings. He's got like 92 pitches. The guy just had testicular cancer. Take him out of the game. Six innings pitch, two earned runs. You're going to be fine. Take him out. Pat on the back. Sends him right back out. Gives up two more hits. What are you doing, Clint Hurdle? Have you ever watched a baseball game? I haven't seen stuff like this since Grady Little tried to kill Pedro Martinez.
Oh, boy.
That's all I have to say about it.
Managers. Gotta love them.
Hey, I guess it's not Matheny, right?
I think he tried to spite you. He said, I'll show that Jed Rigney. I'm going to keep him in for a long time this time.
And here's the thing. Look, I want to say this is not entirely motivated by the fact that I have him on my fantasy baseball team where I stand to win the most money. It is partially motivated by that.
So, Clint,
he keeps killing me with these.
Clint, if you're listening.
He gave up 9 runs and then 8 runs in like 3 innings. That's take him out.
How many runs in the second game? How many runs did he give up?
8 earned.
Wow.
Yeah.
After 6 innings of good pitching?
Oh no. In the third game, the most recent game, he gave up 2 in 6 innings. Okay. But then again, or 6 and a third.
Put runners on right away.
Yeah, like pull him out. Like, I'm not even an expert, but I see he doesn't got his stuff. Take him out. You made it to 6 innings, take him out.
Clint, if you're listening.
I don't know. He probably knows more about baseball than I do.
Jed's got money on the line, Clint.
I got money on the line.
Listen up. Okay, let's jump into headlines.
Oh, yeah. 15 minutes into the show, we'll talk about some headlines. Minutes. What do we got?
Yeah, we'll do a little. We got a whole bunch here, so we can. Some of these are sad. Some of them are happy, depending on what.
Well, let's see if we can make the sad ones happy and the happy ones sad.
So depending on if you're an A's fan or a Mariners fan, this could be happy news because Yonder Alonso is heading to Seattle.
Right. So he's been one of the big stories this year with his change in launch angle on his swing. But then kind of the last month has been not so awesome with the home runs. And as far as I remember, Seattle's not great for left-handed power, but, you know.
No.
Who knows?
But it's grasping at straws a little bit, I think, and hopefully catching, you know, I don't know, I wouldn't say lightning in a bottle. I think the lightning is already struck as far as Alonso is concerned.
Yeah, I mean, he's. I think. Look, they didn't have to give up much. They have all these extra outfielders now that some of them have panned out, right? Mm-hmm. Ben Gamel.
Yeah,
it's Heredia. Been
amazing. Yeah,
it's worked out really nicely for the Mariners. So they gave away Tyler O'Neill for a mediocre starter who had a below mediocre performance in his first game for the Mariners. I don't know. Is Yonder Alonso going to be a difference maker? They're so close, it might be. You know, the standings are so bunched up for that American League wild card.
Yeah, but the bigger thing was that, you know, fans up here were very much aware of the need for starting pitching, and they really didn't deliver on that.
Yeah.
So that was one of the bigger concerns. And you have Hernandez going down again for the second time this year, different injury, but he'll be gone for a month, and not that he's been Mr. Reliable, you know, the last season and a half anyway. So the decline is well underway for Felix, and the rise for Paxton is well on its way. He's been dominant for the last month and a half.
I mean, he's a top 10 pitcher right now, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely.
And when healthy.
6 wins in July is unusual. So he had a pretty amazing month for sure. And he was pitcher of the month, I believe, player of the month or pitcher of the month.
Well, he played and he pitched.
He did. He did both. Okay, so speaking of starting pitching, that the Mariners would have been smart to jump on the bandwagon for Justin Verlander, but there's rumors he's already made it through waivers, so he's clear to go.
And, right, and for those of you who don't know, after the trade deadline, trades can still happen, but every player has to go through waivers, meaning any team can claim him along the way.
And no one claimed him because his price tag is ridiculously high for a few more years. But some teams might be interested, especially the ones that are in, you know, in the hunt. And Astros are in the hunt, obviously, and looking to shore up their kind of, I don't want to say sketchy pitching, but every time somebody comes back from the DL, someone else goes on. So it looks like they're trying to shore things up. I don't know much more than just, you know, the rumors. Has there been anything substantial to validate those rumors?
I mean, there's evidence that it's happened. The question is, I mean, look, the Astros are not known for taking on big contracts. And should they really, like, they're the best team in the American League right now, right?
Mm-hmm.
Should they, I'm not saying, like, well, they should give up because the Dodgers. I'm just saying this team was built off of making a future, keeping that going. Even the Dodgers, who have been very good the last couple of years, have done a great job of not giving away their big assets.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Cody Bellinger, untradeable. Corey Seager, untradeable. But those were, a couple of years ago, those guys were, people were saying, well, why don't they just trade those guys for Cole Hamels? You know, well, now look where the Dodgers would be with Cole Hamels, trying to figure out how to trade him away.
Right.
Or he'd be their number 5 starter or 4 starter or whatever, right? So
yeah, the Astros would have to look at this as like we're going to pay a whole bunch of money for maybe a great stretch run,
and maybe
and have to deal with it next year. Yeah, yeah, it's a 50-50 proposition, I believe.
Yeah, I mean, I think if they're going to do something like that, Sonny Gray was the guy to go after.
Yeah, I've never been a big fan of the rental thing. I mean, the last time that happened with the A's go out and get John Lester, didn't have a great postseason. Or actually, I think they won the first game. I don't remember.
I think he made it. Actually lost the wild card game.
Oh, that's right. They should have won the wild card game. They're playing Houston, I believe. And they were up by 2 or 3 runs in the 7th inning and wound up losing the game.
Yeah. He had a great stretch run, though. He got them into the playoffs.
But it's, you know, you can't hang your hat on one player, you know, especially in the wild card. If you're, I mean, the Astros obviously aren't in the wild card hunt, but if you're in the wild card hunt and you go and give up a lot for hope that you'll get one win and make it to the next round, and then if you lose, that's an awful lot. I mean, that would be a lot to give up, I would, I think, money-wise.
Yeah.
And it changes the culture of the team. I don't see why the Astros would make that trade.
Yeah, I mean, really the best trade they could have made was the Yu Darvish trade.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
But I don't know if Texas was going to trade Yu Darvish across across state. They have a bit of a thing there.
Probably not. Okay, let's move on to Gary Sanchez. Got a day off because his defense stinks.
Yeah, he's got like a dozen passed balls this year. That's a lot of passed balls.
He's riding last year's just ask Jameson offensive Tyon. Helpers. Good thing he's not his catcher, huh?
Maybe get Lance Armstrong in there and give him some tips on anyway.
Ball handling?
Ball handling.
Okay. So Gary Sanchez got one day off, and, you know, it's unusual that they made that the reason why. It's, I guess that's the roundabout way of sending a message to him, you know, letting it out in the media and let the media scrutiny come back to Gary Sanchez to realize that, you know, shore up your defense or it's going to follow you for the rest of your career.
Yeah, especially, what's his name? The manager for the Yankees.
Yeah, was a catcher. So why would he do
that? Former catcher. Is that really, what's his name? Girardi.
Joe Girardi.
Is that really the move that he would have wanted someone to do? Like, why not just bench him and then just don't make a big deal out of it?
Keep it in the locker room.
Yeah, it's weird. That's the beginning of something weird, if you ask me. Now, I know that when he was a prospect, there were some questions about his defense. And then all of a sudden, people stopped having questions about his, Gary Sanchez again. And then all of a sudden people stopped saying that there was a problem with his defense. Like, oh my gosh, look at his arm. What an incredible arm. Like, yeah, that's good. But there's other parts to catching defense than just the arm. And clearly pass the ball is the situation.
Yeah. And especially now with all the advanced metrics that they use, the framing. Yeah. And so, yeah, he's got to shore up that part of his game or he will be a DH.
Yeah.
So we'll see how the world turns for Gary Sanchez. It's kind of strange, too, that the Yankees would be, you know, doing something quite that petty, in my opinion, given where they are, and they need to be focused on winning. You know, they're the up-and-down yo-yo of the Yankees. They
It's a roller coaster, John. It goes up and it goes down like a roller coaster.
Like a roller coaster. Okay, let's move on to Cardinals sending Steven Piscotty to the minors. He was being talked about as a potential trade candidate too, wasn't he, during the trade
season? I didn't hear that.
Yeah,
it's funny you said Spaghetti, and it reminds me, did you ever see What We Do in the Shadows?
Yes, absolutely.
And they have the whole thing Piscotty. Where he's calling Spaghetti these vampires, calling Spaghetti Piscotty. Anyway,
that's
all I'm going to think of now whenever I see Steven.
Highly recommend that movie to anybody who enjoys vampire films and mockumentaries.
But if you don't like to laugh,
don't see this
movie. Don't watch it.
Yeah.
Or if you're like vampirist, because I do feel like it is pro-vampire.
It definitely is.
And so if you have a prejudice against vampires, you're probably not going to enjoy it.
And I understand they are making a sequel that's going to focus on the swearwolves.
Nice.
So that'll be interesting.
They're werewolves, John, not swearwolves.
Not swearwolves. Right. Correct me on that one. Okay. So sent down to the minors after signing a 6-year extension earlier this year. What's up with that?
Yeah. I mean, the only reason, normally, like, whatever they send, but they've been sending guys down, and like they sent Aledmys Diaz down, they sent Randall Grichuk down, like, and then they bring him back up, and like, maybe just get rid of the shitty manager. Pardon my language. Pardon my swearwolves. Maybe just get rid of the terrible manager, though. Like, there's something going on with the team if they keep having to send guys down to the minors. That's my opinion.
Well, this will be 2 years back-to-back year after seven-year stretch of making the playoffs. This will be the second year in a row. That doesn't fly in Cardinals baseball. So wouldn't be surprised if Matheny was under the gun come the end of the season. We shall see.
Yeah, and they might actually finish under 500. This year, which would only be the second time this century.
Yeah.
But still, the Cardinals fans are used to a certain level of success. And frankly, Matheny's a bad manager. So what more do you need? Underperforming and, you know, bad results. And that usually gets someone fired.
We should do an episode on ranking of the managers. Or maybe the top five, bottom five.
Ooh, that would be fun.
So I know you have opinions.
I definitely have opinions. You know what we'll do is later on this season, when we get near sort of awards time, we can start talking about, and we'll do who should be the managers of the year, and then also the mismanagers of the year. Am I right? Pun.
That's good.
Can we get a sound effect for puns? Pun.
I'll work on it. So now on to the sadder news in baseball, actually losing Darren Dalton and Don Baylor within 24 hours of each other. That was aware of Darren Dalton, but was not aware that Don Baylor was ill. And yeah, that's just some memories there, definitely, as a older gentleman myself, just turned 54 on Sunday. You know, these are people that I grew up watching, and, you know, Don Baylor in particular. Just kind of like a slap when Darren Dalton was so young.
Yeah, I mean, Don Baylor considered one of the nicest guys in the sport. I remember I my first introduction to him, I think, was as the manager of the Rockies. Mm-hmm. Then I think he went on to be like a hitting coach and whatever. Yeah, I mean, real nice guy, you know, great, you know, not Hall of Fame great, but very good baseball player. 1 year at 52 steals.
Yeah, that's what I remember him was with the A's in the 70s. I think he had mid-20s stolen bases. I was big A's fan as a kid growing up and all things A's throughout the 70s. And, yeah, he was definitely one of those unknowns, the speedsters that the A's developed. And, yeah, you know, think of him as that, you know, as his career went on, was not about the stolen bases. It was about power and being hit by pitches.
Yes. Yes.
I think he's the all-time leader in hit by pitches.
I think he was until a few years ago, and then someone passed
possible.
Him.
Yeah.
Biggio possible. Must have passed him.
Could. Yeah, that's true.
I'm sure Biggio passed him, because that was sort
Baylor,
of Biggio's
I think one season had something like 50 hit by pitches. So
yeah,
I have to look that
getting
up,
on base.
Yeah, definitely would have helped in the OPB ranking, OBP ranking.
Which ranking is that?
The OBP. Yeah, you know me.
So I just want to make sure that you are down with OBP.
Yes, I frequently make that mistake.
And then Darren Dalton, who was one of the reasons why I sort of rooted for the Phillies against the Toronto Blue Jays back in, 92?
Mm-hmm.
Had two really great years, and then, you know, the knees. And for a catcher, got to have them knees. And for
but
power,
but he got his World Series
stuff.
Ring with the. I guess he got his second World Series ring with the Marlins in '97. He was their first
was he sort of around
part-time first baseman?
So he
was there. He was, you know, Dutch was clutch with the Marlins in '97.
Yeah. Anyway, I also was rooting against Toronto because, you know, Canada. Shh! Don't tell my wife.
Our arch rivals.
Yes, America's hat.
Very good. Okay, let's move on to one of the stranger stories, but a nice goodwill gesture on behalf of the Cubs. They decided that, you know, after the 2003 debacle with Stephen Bartman and Moises Alou and Cubs Nation Global, you know, hating one individual.
You mean the entire world.
Yeah, they would make amends and give him a World Series ring. That's a pretty nice gesture.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think when we were going into the World Series, there was some speculation like, oh, well, should they have him come out and throw a first pitch? Like, no, not until they win.
Right.
Then you can put it all behind her. It was like behind him. It was like Buckner in Boston. Like, everyone hated that guy until 2004. Then it was like, hey, you know what? Now it's time to heal. And he's like, screw you guys. I'm never going to heal.
But he was doing commercials with, you know, was it Mookie Wilson with the...
signing at conventions and stuff.
Yeah,
and like,
yeah, I'm that guy. Yeah, let's live. Yeah, he can't run away from it. Just embrace it. That's all he can do.
But he just hated Boston because Boston was garbage about it. Mm-hmm. Boston isn't really racist. They're just awful. I love that town, but the people there are just so red ass. You know, like it's the Irish thing or the whatever. It just
high expectations for their sports franchises too.
Yeah. I mean, especially, I guess, because the Celtics, right? Like, Celtics kind of ruined them for...
Yeah, for the 50s, ruined it for everybody. Yeah. So, they won, eight world titles in the 50s? That'll kind of spoil you.
Yeah.
Kind of like the Patriots are now.
Hey, you know what? The Patriots are a model franchise. Hey, they gave Tom Brady's mom a Super Bowl ring.
Did they? That was nice.
I'm not sure what exactly for, other than giving birth to Tom Brady.
And Tom Terrific is turned 40 years old last week, didn't he?
Did he? Good for him.
He did. I believe he did.
If I were him, I'd get out of the game, but then I'd be much more worried about concussions.
Well, he said he wants to play until he's in his mid-40s. So
that might be the concussion symptom right there.
Which he's denying. Doesn't want to talk about it.
Of course he's denying it. He doesn't know. He's got concussion symptoms.
He doesn't even remember when he started playing. But Belichick is probably going like, dude, I can't do this for another 5 years. You know, come on. We're going out together.
It's so funny to think of all the backup quarterbacks that team has had that were like, oh, no, this is going to be the next guy. This is going to be Matt Castle. And then, you know,
they
all the way now
to elsewhere.
They have Garoppolo now.
Yeah. And they always go somewhere else and do nothing.
Yeah, well, they're system quarterbacks, you know. Like, they get trained how to do things a certain way, and then they go to another team. It isn't gonna run those same kinds of plays, and then, duh, it doesn't work. It's not rocket science, man.
No, we'll get more into football in the special preseason football episode coming up.
Yes,
later.
Definitely want to save it for the. We'll save a whole bracket for football.
Right.
You know, it's funny. I tried to include some football stories in this week's extra innings, but there's not a lot going on in football right now.
No,
I mean, other than Kaepernick not having a job, but that doesn't really seem like news. That seems like, yeah, well, okay, doesn't have a job.
Well, the I don't know if you saw the Sherman's comments about it and saying that it has nothing to do with his skill set, because just look at, you know, you're trying to tell me that the Jets starting and backup quarterbacks are better than Kaepernick? Come on, they're horrible. So he didn't mind going out on the limb and saying that the reason why Kaepernick isn't playing is because it's not his color. It has nothing to do with his skill set. It has to do with the fact that he was, you know, making waves, and nobody wants that to be associated with him because of that.
I mean, it's going to be, you know, a deal breaker, right? Like, but it's not going to, like, if the guy had skill, no one would care. If Tom Brady was making waves, they'd be like, well, so what?
Yeah, but
it's like,
if you're choosing
off the scrap heap, like, yeah, I'd rather have the guy that's not going to be a locker room distraction.
Right. And I think his skill set is definitely there.
Also, can you imagine how much hair care products are needed in the locker room for Kaepernick?
Imagine if he and Troy Polamalu were on the same team.
That'd be out of hand. They'd have to set up a whole salon.
Right. They'd have their own staff there just for those two.
So this isn't about race or skills. It's about salon space in the clubhouse.
Oh, that's good. Okay, now this one was interesting to me for the Adrian Beltre getting his 3,000th hit, because I wasn't even aware he was that close, because I hadn't heard anything about it until the day before. So it's one of those things that usually when you have those milestone events happening, that there's the countdowns and the watches, and I didn't really see that much of it, you know, on the national scale. I'm sure obviously that was pretty big in Texas, but I didn't really know that much about how close he was until, you know, a few days before.
I don't think it was even big in Texas. I think it was just sort of like, oh, look, he's almost got 3,000 hits. Okay, now he's at 3,000 hits. Okay, good.
So, like, you know, when Jeter was getting close, it was like national headlines, the countdown. We
followed
him.
But Jeter is like a star. Adrian Beltre is a very good player. He'll probably be in the Hall of Fame. He's that good overall, but he's not a star.
Right. He's not he's consistent.
He's a great baseball player, right? But there's a difference between a great baseball player and a charismatic energy vibe, you know, force of nature kind of guy. You know, and a lot of Adrian stuff is sort of cumulative, right? Like, he has been playing in the majors since he was, what, 18?
Yeah, 18, so, 19 years old, yeah.
Remember they had that whole free agency thing with the Dodgers where he had signed when he was 16, but he was actually 15, and so when they canceled his deal, anyway, whatever. Then he went and signed with the Mariners. They're like, hey, I know, I'll go to Seattle. They love Hispanics here.
Yeah, and he's never been on a box of Wheaties. He's never been on the cover of a baseball video game. So he's one of those players that longevity, started young, consistent. You know,
great
the last
defense,
few years,
though.
Really
always.
And he's probably more well known for the fact that he doesn't like people to touch his head. Because that's the big, you see, anytime he just freaks out for whatever reason. He just,
see, that's the thing we should be keeping track of, not his hits, but how many times people touch his head.
And how he goes ballistic whenever. So when he got his 3,000th hit, of course, everybody was trying to, you know, tap him on the head and touch his hair, and he'll have nothing of it.
Is he an impact guy or a cleanliness guy? Like, he doesn't like the physical touching or the dirtiness of it?
We might have to look into that. We might have to talk about it.
I'm thinking what this guy just needs to do is just put a bunch of Purell on his head. Then he's just always clean. No bacteria.
Right.
Or instead of having hair, put like a foam helmet head.
Right. Something protective so that people can't touch. And
so
it's
no
not
one's
like
actually touching you.
He has. It's not like he has flowing locks. You know, he doesn't have Troy Polamalu hair.
Exactly.
Or Colin Kaepernick hair. So I'm not sure about all that. So we touched on this next one just briefly last week before you slapped my hand and said, let's not talk about that because that's something we can talk about next week, which was Pete Rose being accused of, I can't even think of this, kind of makes me throw up in my mouth a little bit, but being involved with an underage girl when he was back in the day, what is that?
Well, first of all, I read this as that he was involved with a girl in her 70s. Not in the 70s. So I was immediately like, whoa, good for Pete. You don't see enough of that. You don't see enough of the older woman up. Getting the younger strange, you know?
Right, right.
It's always like the older guy, and oh, it's totally culturally acceptable, and blah, blah, blah. Well, this is also not culturally acceptable. And I don't know how true it is or whatever. My problem with it is that when you spend your life being Pete Rose and then an allegation comes along like this, the default setting is everyone believes the allegation. And that's what you get for spending your life being a jerk. Mm-hmm. That's why when I'm a jerk, I always try to have times where I'm not a jerk.
To balance it out.
I want the not a jerk to outweigh the jerk.
Right. And Pete didn't care about that.
Pete didn't care about that and spent the most of his life being a jerk.
So this happened 40 years ago, and it's coming up now.
Yeah. Well, it's dubious, right? It's not like he's suddenly in the public eye.
Right.
It's dubious. Just,
and he probably likes it because it keeps him in the headlines. Keeps him relevant. Yeah, I hated Pete Rose with such a passion, but I wouldn't mind if I was a manager or an owner having 9 Pete Roses.
I thought you were going to say you wouldn't mind if he had sex with you when you were in your teens.
When I was underage.
When you were in the 70s.
No, hated him. Hated
what are we even talking about now, John?
What were we talking about? Now let's move on. Let's move away from Pete Rose, the disgusting Pete Rose.
Yeah.
So Freddie Freeman offered to move over to third base, and apparently that experiment has gone by the wayside.
Right, so he came back from his injury, and Matt Adams was hitting so well that it was like, gosh, we've got to keep both these guys in the lineup. But they're both first basemen. And so the move was Freddie Freeman saying, well, I'll play third base because Matt Adams can't play the outfield. Because it happens, right? Like, look, I used to play baseball, and then I would switch over to softball as I got older. And at a certain point, I just had to play first base. Mm-hmm. You know, either that or DH. And there's no DH in the National League. So Matt Adams, they're like, oh, okay, well, we'll get both of these hot bats. And then Matt Adams sort of cooled off, and then they were like, I think there was one play in one game where there was like a hot shot that bounced up on Freddie Freeman. And I think the team was like, yeah, so that's fun. That's the end of that. We don't want our best player of the last, you know, since Chipper Jones to have his teeth knocked out, you know, right. So we can have Matt Adams in the lineup. So they put Matt Adams in the outfield, which of course makes all their pitchers worse. But Freddie Freeman is now safe at first base.
And will probably be there for a long time.
Yeah, and I remember a couple years ago they were thinking about trading him, and because they're like, well, they should trade everyone. And I'm definitely a fan of trade everyone, but he was still so young that it was like, maybe don't trade Freddie Freeman. You hang on to him. And then he is, the last year and a half, he's just been, I mean, one of the top 10 hitters in the league. Mm-hmm. So good move by them for not, I always make fun of the Braves for making bad moves, but this was a good move.
Do they probably listen to you?
I don't think they did. I think they've also been doing other good moves. But also, it's kind of 50-50, right? Like, yeah, the Andrelton Simmons trade was bad, you know, to get Sean Newcomb. Sean Newcomb's good, but Andrelton Simmons is, like, the best defensive all shortstop. Defensive,
yeah.
Like, even if he doesn't hit, he's still going to be better than, you know, 85% of the league at that position. So that wasn't maybe a great trade. But, you know, defense is sort of undervalued, and, you know, whatever. They had Dansby Swanson coming and Ozzie Albies and all that. So they were not a great trade. But you know what? They're the ones that got, you know, Dansby Swanson and Ender Inciarte and Kobe Allard, or I don't remember who the third piece was, for from the Diamondbacks, the debacle, for Shelby Miller.
Yeah.
Yikes. Which apparently the rumor is that was not the only ace, quote unquote, that the Diamondbacks were targeting, but it's the ace that they chose. They had other aces for that same package of players.
Bad choice.
And they chose Shelby Miller. And of course, that's why they're no longer Dave Stewart and Tony La Russa are no longer managing the Diamondbacks.
So that let's move on to the last headline, which was kind of a interesting little social commentary about, having respect for the opposing team. Little League softball removed a team that qualified for the World Series over a social media post where they, I think it was on Snapchat, flipped off the team that they just beat.
Yeah.
So the big kerfuffle over that was that a worthy move? Was that, I mean, to me, it seems awfully severe for what happened. It was like,
I'm torn on it, John. Team.
It's not like they all posed and did it. There was, I think, four or five of the girls on the team did it, and it was on Snapchat, so it wasn't there forever for all the world to see. Still not very respectful, but gosh, remove, maybe suspend those players for a game. I'm not quite sure.
Yeah, see, I have a problem with that too, because if you suspend them for the game, why not just take them out of the tournament? I mean, it's obviously inappropriate behavior, but I think like this whole thing that happens now with like people are just overreacting to this stuff. Like, yes, it's totally inappropriate. They shouldn't have done it, but it's not like they hurt anyone.
Right, right. So the way I look at it,
you know what? If the other team didn't want to be flipped off, maybe don't lose the game.
Well, here's the way I look at it. So the girls who saw the photo, or whoever saw the photo of the girls flipping them off, I don't know what the context was. If it was like, you know, screw you, it was a team from Washington, Kirkland, screw you, Kirkland, type of thing. So I think the girls on the Kirkland team will probably forget about that gesture in, you know, several weeks, if not days. But the girls on this team now who weren't involved in the photograph will be pissed off for their entire lives, saying they never got a chance to go because of these other girls.
Yeah. Now, granted, we are talking about softball, so it doesn't really matter.
No, but for them in this moment, it's a pretty big deal.
Exactly.
And I would love to do a little bit more research to find out how the parents of the girls on the team that was banned feel about the four or five or six girls that did this.
And I mean, it's not like they cheated.
No.
You know, you don't see a team get eliminated, pulled out of the playoffs in the NBA because, you know, Dennis Rodman flips off somebody in the stands.
Right.
Like, whatever, they're kids. And, you know, frankly, I'm a big fan of the Bird. I'm going to be honest with you. I'm a big fan.
You see a lot of that in New York.
It's very punk rock. And were they really even flipping off the team so much as just like they thought they were being cool?
Badass. They were being badass.
Right. They were being punk rock, which, of course, they were the furthest thing you could be from punk rock, being a girls softball team. Not that girls can't be punk rock, but I think a softball team is not punk rock.
They're just a bunch of anarchists.
Exactly. So maybe in this way, the anarchy of taking them out of the competition is a lesson to be learned about anarchism.
And maybe for the Kirkland Washington team, what if they go on to win the World Series? That's a story.
Yeah. But I probably won't even follow up on it unless they give somebody the Bird.
And Little League softball, don't hear anything about it at all other than when somebody flips somebody off.
Yeah. And again, like the reactionary environment, I mean, maybe a year ago, no one cares, right? But with all this Trump stuff and everyone's got to flip out and lose their minds. You hear about this Google guy?
Mm-mm.
This guy writes a 10-page, I don't want to say it was a manifesto.
I did hear about that.
Yeah. So he basically writes a whole thing about how he thinks that the Google sort of work environment is sort of an echo chamber. And it's not actually promoting diversity. It's promoting very specific lines of diversity.
Exclusivity.
Which in itself is not being, no diversity of thought and lacking a meritocracy. So lesser people are being promoted and hired because of whatever. Anyway, so this guy lost his job for just having these opinions and stating them, basing them off of research. Well, I'm not saying the research was perfect, but for a group of people to be so emphatic that things like climate science are undisputed, to then dismiss a whole branch of science as being, well, that's sort of dubious and up in the air, and, well, you can't say that because it's... And he's like he's basically saying, don't treat everyone as part of a giant group, just treat each person as an individual. That was the basic conclusion that he came up with, and for that, he was fired. because people lost their minds because they read something. They read half a sentence where it said that women don't right. perform this function on the average as well as men. Like, oh, men and women are the same, except they're completely different. Ah!
So is he going to, like, in Jerry Maguire, going to go off and start his own agency? He's going to start gaggling?
My guess is he sues because it sounds very suable. Mm-hmm. But my guess is that Google knew that he would sue and that the suit that they would have with him is less than the suit that they would have if he stayed.
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Smart. That's pretty crafty.
That's just lawyers saying, look, if he stays, because there were already, and then not to prove the point or to show that women are weak, but there were women who didn't show up to work the next day because they were so frightened by this document.
Wow.
Like, look, you're proving his point. You're wrecking feminism if you're saying, like, no, we're equal, but I can't show up today because it's just so emotional about what he said about women.
You sound like you're getting choked up.
I think women are amazing, but I do think that men and women are different.
There's some obvious things that just visually you can tell there's a difference. So,
I mean, he even says in his write-up that, like, women are better at organizing. Well, then do you think men were like, what if there's a man there whose job is organizing? What's he going to say? Like, well, now my job's in jeopardy and I don't feel safe because this guy thinks that I'm less capable than a woman.
Yeah, he's been marginalized. Someone's opinion marginalized him for the rest of his life.
And then he's flipping off the bird, and then he's fired. He's on Snapchat. Anyway, here's the deal. This guy is suing Google. He's going to make money from them. He's going to get a book deal. He's going to make money from that. And then he can go do whatever software engineering he wants to do.
Maybe he'll be traded to the Astros.
That would be something. You know what? He might go have sex with a woman in her 70s.
He could. Or get his 3,000th hit. Who knows? Okay, let's move on to the starting nine.
Yes.
So for the premiere of Dark Tower this past weekend, we have a Stephen King reference. 9 players with Stephen King-sounding character names. Or I guess it's you have to be a Stephen King fan.
Right.
To appreciate these?
I mean, I'll contextualize these enough that people will get it. Like, you don't have to be a Stephen King fan, but most people kind of know most of his stuff in pop culture and that sort of thing. So I'm going to stick to Dark Tower stuff, I think, first. I'm not a big Stephen King fan, but I will say I'm a fan of some of his work. I'm a fan of some of the adaptations of his work into film, I should say.
Same here. I have never read a Stephen King book, but I have enjoyed some of his movies, particularly The Shining.
Yes, The Shining, Shawshank Redemption. The first Carrie is actually very rewatchable.
Yes. Yes.
Green Mile is pretty good. It's a little long, but it's pretty good. Anyway, so here we go. Stephen King character. So in The Dark Tower, there's a character called the Crimson King. And so I got Scott Kingery.
Okay.
Who plays for the Phillies.
Solid.
Whose colors are crimson. Right?
Very good. Nice pull.
Okay. Now, and again, I don't know this for sure, but the lead character, a protagonist in The Dark Tower, is Roland Deschain. Well, how about Odrysamer Despain?
Okay.
Right?
That's connected.
We all know Christine. What about the car, the death car? What about Christian Yelich?
Okay.
Marlins outfielder.
I like it.
All right. We all saw Misery, of course. Mm-hmm. That's a great... great film. Annie Wilkes. What about Annie Duffy?
Annie. We're going to start calling him Annie.
There's an apostrophe in there. All right. Next, we have Kurt Barlow. Great. And this is a little bit more of an obscure Stephen King character. But what was the Salem's Lot? Is that the one he's in?
That got me.
Anyway, he's a vampire character. And ironically, I always thought of Kirk Reeder as a sort of vampire-y looking guy. And so Kurt, anyway, whatever. So I've got, for Kurt Barlow, I got Craig Breslow.
That's good. I was thinking that as you were going.
Randall Flagg. For those Stephen King fans out there, they're like, of course, why wasn't he listed first? Big time Stephen King character. It's in multiple of his books, I think, actually, not just in an individual thing.
And I have no idea who
he's like
is, so
he's like this sort of like supernatural guy that's kind of a bad guy, I think. And he was in what was the one they did with Lieutenant Dan, the TV movie series. This is awful. Moving on.
Don't know.
Randall Grichuk.
Okay. Okay, good.
Lester Lowe. Who you might know, the character Lester Lowe. I don't. I know. I looked it up this morning, and that's a Stephen King character, John Lester.
John Lester.
For a Carrie, what about Carlos Carrie?
See, I like those much better. I like the adaptations much better.
And then last but not least, one of Stephen King's most famous characters, It. And for It, I have Ichiro.
Both have known by single names.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. It's good. Seventh inning stretch. There we go. Now, starting nine. Now we're moving to seventh inning stretch. The new segment.
Yes.
This is exciting. So what was the inspiration for the seventh inning stretch?
I just feel like sometimes we talk so much about baseball, and I feel like there should be some more sort of cultural stuff in here because that's really what's interesting to me. And frankly, my wife doesn't like talking to me about this stuff. So I've decided to hijack a portion of this show to talk about some pop culture stuff. So
I think we just right there, seventh inning stretch expands our audience off the bat.
Well, theoretically, I'm hoping that it augments the listening experience. I could be wrong.
I just picture people going, ooh, I wonder what seventh inning stretch is going to be about this week.
Right? Or they're just being like, oh, good, finally a break, right?
Right, I can go get a cup of coffee, go to the bathroom, walk the dog.
So for this, what I want to do is I think we're just keep it doing like top fives.
Okay.
Stuff like that for movies, television shows, music, books, maybe. But as you could tell from my Stephen King stuff, maybe not. Well, it would have been very clever if I did a seventh inning stretch where we talked about Stephen King films.
So a couple of things that probably won't be in the list. Well, top five Canadians, top five soccer.
Top five soccer matches. Yes. Soccer goals. But we could do a bottom five, which would basically just be all soccer.
I think we just did that right now.
But anyway, so the idea here is we take a little break. We talk a little pop culture. And to ease people into this transition, we're going to talk a little pop culture about baseball movies, top five baseball movies.
Okay.
All right. So
are these in any particular order?
Well, I figured you and I would come up with the order.
And I'm seeing a list of six.
Well, see, because I didn't know what you thought would be the top five. I'm going to tell you right now, one for me, and this is a little recency bias, Moneyball.
Yeah, it's contextual for me because I would say, you know, the one that hit home for me is Field of Dreams. That would be my number one, and primarily because of the emotional.
Yeah, but there isn't really baseball in it, John. Is it really a baseball movie?
I also read the book before the movie.
If baseball happens in the movie, baseball doesn't happen in the movie.
Yeah, well, there was baseball. They played some ball in the field.
Yeah, did they? Did they have a little batting practice, John?
There was baseball in it.
Well, they hit some grounders. Maybe a little pop flies, practicing fly balls, shagging flies. Maybe that's what they should have called the movie: Field of Shagging Flies.
Field of Catch with My Dad.
Field of Tears.
That was a weeper, though. I mean,
no, that's a really good movie. And the only reason why I'm giving it crap is because Bull Durham's got to be in the top five.
I would agree with that.
Bad News Bears? I mean, iconically, doesn't it have to be there? If we're talking about, like, cultural influence? You know what? Field of Dreams is better than Bad News Bears. Even though Bad News Bears has actual baseball in it. And then Major League. Which I think is just a very, I think it's very underrated film.
It is.
I think it's a normal rated baseball film, but as a film in general, it's an underrated film. Like it holds up across all, it's not just for baseball fans.
It is, and it is considered a classic that still plays well.
Yeah.
I think it's just as funny now as it was. The sequel's not so good.
Precipitous, as they say, decline. Mm-hmm. Major League 2, Major League 3, Major League 4, going to Korea, Major League 5, the Independent League, and heroin addiction, Major League 6. I stole some baseball bats from Play It Again Sports.
Expansion
Major League
on Mars.
7. I spent time in prison for financial fraud, the Lenny Dykstra story.
and on it goes.
Yes.
With a smaller and smaller audience.
Yes.
And then straight to video.
Well, these are like straight to the TV, the video screen at the gas station pump. These aren't straight to video.
Yeah, but I think, you know, the one that you haven't mentioned yet is The Natural.
The Natural is a great, great film. And I think if we're talking dramas, I think Moneyball and The Natural are Field of Dreams is a drama, right?
Yeah.
It feels a little bit more spunky than the other two, though.
It's a little bit more manipulative emotionally, too.
Yeah, that's true.
For sure.
Well, you got the whole
definitely tugs on the heartstrings.
I was going to just call him Edward James Olmos. Darth Vader. Jones.
Right. Jones. James Earl Jones.
James Earl Jones. Not Edward James Olmos. But to be fair, very similar. Both have letters
the character
in
actors,
their names.
Right. Yeah.
It's three names.
But I would have to go with Field of Dreams 1. Probably The Natural number 2. Major League, Bull Durham number 3, Major League number 4, and then Moneyball might not make my top 5.
John, you're just showing how old you really are. Like you said earlier what your age was, and now you proved it.
and the reason why it's up there for you is because it's about metrics, and it's all about the changing of the game.
It's not about metrics, it's a metaphor. That's the thing is, of all these films, it's the best metaphor for life, for failing and continuing and changing. It's an incredible film, John.
It is an incredible film.
If you take the baseballness out of it, the metaphor that it presents.
Less about baseball and more about behind the scenes.
Yeah, like who cares about the freaking numbers? Like obviously I love the numbers, but I was so surprised when I saw the film that it presented, because baseball, of course, is a great metaphor for life anyway, in general, because there's so much failure in baseball.
Right.
Whatever, the old thing, like, whatever, 7 out of 10 times you go to bat, you fail, and you're in the Hall of Fame if you hit 300.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So there's this thing. And I think it's just a spectacular film. I've watched it maybe a dozen times.
I've seen it twice.
Yeah. It's, anyway. And again, not to say that these are all great films, but I just think that one sort of snuck up on me. I didn't think it was going to be that good, and I thought it was great, and now I'm saying it's number one.
Well, how about, I'm going to bring this one up just because I know how you're going to respond to it, but one of them that is consistently in top tens, if not top fives, is A League of Their Own.
No, that is not a good film.
Why is that?
A, it doesn't hold up. B, why not have John Lovitz be in the rest of the movie? Because that guy was goddamn hilarious in that movie. He should have been throughout. As a storytelling film, you can't, like, you can watch The Natural now and not feel like, oh, this is an old film. The story still holds in terms of the way that it's told. The way that League of Their Own was told is a very particular to its time. Plus, though I will say, maybe one of the greatest porn names ever with A League of Their Moan.
I hadn't heard that one. That's good.
And again, not to say that that's a bad film, but just structurally, it doesn't really all hold up to me.
Okay, let me throw out two other ones for your top five for consideration.
Okay.
8 Men Out, John Sayles film.
I would say that's top 10, but it's so depressing to me. Like, that story is so depressing it's hard for me to put that in the top five.
Yeah, especially for Shoeless Joe. You feel so bad for him.
Yeah. I felt the worst for John Cusack's character.
Yeah.
Hey, and I'm not just saying anything.
Now that's a good John Cusack reference. Okay, the other one I would throw out there, The Sandlot. And that has James Earl Jones in it as well.
Like, a friend of mine's in that movie, so I feel a little weird speaking out of turn, but I just don't think that. I think that's a kid's movie.
It is a kid's movie.
And if I was a kid, I would probably like that movie over all these.
And I have to say, I have only seen bits and pieces of that film. I have not seen it in its entirety.
Yeah. But I think it's I think that's a great film for sort of nostalgically remembering childhood and whatever. But that's, to me, that maybe puts it in the top 20. I mean, it's better than like Mr. 3000.
Or Mr. Baseball.
Or Mr. Baseball. Or Trouble with the Curve.
Yeah, there's...
Don't even get me started about Trouble with the Curve. I watched that movie. I was picking that movie all kinds of apart.
I haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, don't bother.
I just... It just never really resonated with me. What about Fever Pitch? It's all about the Red Sox.
You know what,
Sox.
John? I hate you so much right now. That abomination. That's the scourge on the face of...
Stephen King is in it.
Is he?
He is. He's one of the fans in the crowd.
Yeah. I mean, that was a good one, too. That's fun. But I don't think that holds up as a great film.
There was one other one, an older film.
John, the segment's going on. This is the longest stretch in the history of baseball.
Yeah, because it's about baseball. That's why. I think we're going on. Oh, yeah, we're up to an hour already. Yeah. So moving right along, are you buying it?
Anyway, good conversation.
Yes.
Good baseball
and
it'll,
movie. And for fans of pop culture, future ones will be even better because it won't be about baseball.
Right.
Okay. Moving on along. Right. Moving right along to Are You Buying It?
Yes. Okay.
So one we're going to...
Yeah. Go ahead.
Recent call-ups. Let's focus on some recent call-ups. Are you buying them as a staying on or just a cup of coffee for now?
Right. Now, what's funny about this list is when I started making this list, at first, it was like, oh, wow, I have all of these guys and my minor league team on the fantasy baseball team that in the league that you and I have. I have, and I was like, oh, I'll just do a whole thing about how great my players are. But I was like, oh, you know what? People probably don't really care too much about that besides me. So let's talk about all the recent call-ups. So we have Derek Fisher with the Houston Astros. They got rid of Nori Aoki, and he's a very good player. He's killing AAA. I think he might have a little bit of a platoon problem, meaning he can only face right-handed pitchers, but that is what is called the strong side of the platoon because most pitchers are right-handed. And he has a little bit of a strikeout problem, but he's already been very productive. They have him at the top of the lineup. He's got power and speed. I'm buying it.
Is he going to stay?
Yeah, he'll stay.
Okay.
And he'll be their starting left fielder next year.
You heard it here first.
Next up is Rafael Devers of the Red Sox, who came up and in his first week hit three home runs and is batting .350 and playing okay defense at third, and he handles their third base problem. And I guess the reason he moved up so quickly from single A to double A to triple A to the majors was because he's a very good baseball player.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I'm buying it.
Panda, we hardly knew you.
They're paying him what? They're gonna pay him like $400,000 a year? That's a good trade off.
Yeah. Yeah, very good.
Next up, Ozzie Albies from Atlanta. Here's the thing, John. I've been giving you crap about him all year, but I'm buying it.
Yeah?
I'm buying it in a baseball way and in a fantasy baseball way.
Really?
Because I think he's going to have speed. Maybe not this year, but starting next year, going into that. I think he's going to get 30 to 35, maybe even 40 stolen bases as a peak. And in fantasy baseball, stolen bases are where it's at right now. Those are the hardest things to get from your offense. And you can get powers everywhere. Runs are everywhere. RBIs are everywhere. But
yeah, the speed game is definitely in the minority these days.
Yeah, and fading fast. And also, he's a very good defensive player. And he...
So where does he stay at second?
Well, that's the question, right? I think Dansby Swanson is the answer to that question.
Right.
Is how so, does Dansby respond to being sent down to the minors? And so far, it's not been that good. But I'm buying him as second base. He may move over to short, which makes him even more valuable. I'm buying him.
Well, that's good to hear for my fantasy team.
Yes. Next up is Ahmed Rosario, who I'm also buying. Not as much speed as Albies, but speed and power, maybe a little more power than Albies.
As long as he's not affected by the clubhouse environment.
I do believe he will be able to survive the toxic clubhouse environment over there with the Mets. But defense, I mean, he's basically like what you want in a shortstop. Defense, some power, some speed. I mean, he may not be Carlos Correa, but he kind of has that upside available. Mm-hmm. Francisco Lindor kind of thing, you know? Though I think in the minor leagues, he was better than Francisco Lindor was, but then Lindor, you know, took off when he hit the majors. So, but I think he's going to be, you know, I think he's going to be a key player there for the rest of this year, of course, and then but also going forward for them.
So far you're all in on four players.
Yes. I'm buying all of them.
Buying all of them.
Every one of these guys makes their Major League Baseball team better, makes your fantasy baseball team better. Every one of these guys is not necessarily elite, but in that area just below elite that could then become elite.
And what about the final person on your list?
This is the guy I'm the most worried about, Yoan Moncada. The strikeouts. I mean, I watched him play, because I'm the White Sox now, right? I used to be in the Red Sox system. Mm-hmm. He just keeps striking out. Though he did have a nice series against the Red Sox, is mostly singles. And this is like a linebacker dude. This is like Matt Kemp, mm-hmm. you know, at second base. And I'm dubious about whether that's a good idea. Like, should you have a linebacker guy at second base? Shouldn't he be a third baseman or outfield?
A left fielder.
Yeah. like a really great left fielder, like a Barry Bonds left fielder, right? I don't know. It's a bit, I'm not buying.
So do you, in situations like that, like in Dansby Swanson as well, just kind of like superstar pedigree coming in, let's let him, you know, survive at the major league level. Does it make more sense to let him mature a little bit in the minors for a year or two?
I mean, I don't know the numbers on this, and I think it's probably different from player to player. Certainly, as we mentioned earlier, we don't want to say broadly things apply to specific individuals. But I would say broadly, like, you leave him up and you let him work with the key is, I think with him is going to be getting a hitting coach that can get him to use his strengths and to minimize his weaknesses. Mm-hmm. It's worked for some guys and it hasn't worked for others. I mean, you see the tools there. Like, you see the power, you see the speed. He's got this great speed, especially for a big guy. Again, it reminds me a lot of Matt Kemp. But, you know, Matt Kemp wound up being basically a zero wins above replacement player because his defense got so bad. So I don't know. I'm a lot more dubious of Yoan Moncada. And when you look back now on that Chris Sale trade, it looks like it's
a steal.
I don't want to say it's a steal.
It's a steal.
But it's basically a steal, right? Like, Yoan Moncada definitely is not the number one prospect in baseball.
Yeah, he's not going to win Rookie of the Year this year, that's for sure.
Yeah. But I think it's the right move for the White Sox. You know, like, they're doing a rebuild, but you do have to start, like, having some of these guys play at the major league level. So Yoan Moncada is a little bit ahead of the curve, and then they start bringing up some other guys. Kopech is still...
How old is he?
21.
Okay. So he's still got a year or two of maturing.
So it's still there. It's just... Like, the especially compared to these other guys where I think the floors are so much higher than him. I think the floor for Moncada is like a total bust.
We shall see. So 4 out of 5, you're buying?
Yeah.
Okay. Yep, we'll see. And it's interesting, too, because, you know, you go back 15, 20 years, players weren't being called up in their early 20s. It was a rarity when that happened. And now we're seeing more and more of it, that the game is kind of shifting away from the aging superstars to more of the metrics. The peripherals are definitely playing a part in that. It's like, how can you ignore this?
Yeah, because I think teams are trying to maximize their player value, how long they have them, you know, how long they get them at their lowest prices.
Right.
Everyone's trying to, like, you know, with the different deadlines during the year and the arbitration clock and all that stuff, they're trying to... Right. Game the system, and, you know, whatever. That's how you win games. That's how you win World Series.
And I don't feel sorry for any of the players who feel like they were, you know, gypped out of another year. It's like, yeah, you'll make your millions. If you're good, you're going to do just fine. Chris Bryant's going to do just fine.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we're talking about, oh, he lost out on $10 million, but it's like $10 million out of $200 million.
Right.
Hard to feel too...
I think he'll be okay.
Right. Too many tears about that.
Yeah.
Can you feel tears? I don't know if you can. It's hard to feel tears about that, John. Not all my writing is great. Not all my word combos make sense. Though I did like earlier when I did testicularly cancered.
That was good. That was
I like
nice
making that a verb. That felt good. It felt strong.
It was good. Write that one down. Let's wrap it up with extra innings. We only have a few this week. Extra innings, taking a look outside of the baseball world.
Yeah.
Even further outside.
No real
than
other
we did.
Sports news going on this week, which is strange.
Yeah, it's kind of quiet. Kind of quiet. Even though the NFL is going on, not a whole heck of a lot. So the I heard a little bit about the HBO hacking thing, and what I heard primarily was that they're going to reveal a script from one of the future episodes of Game of Thrones. So that would be a pretty big hit, I guess, in the HBO world. But what is the gist of the whole fiasco?
Okay, so some hackers got into HBO's computers and got, I think, some scripted stuff, but then also some video or stills, and now they're holding them ransom for what is believed to be approximately 6 million bitcoins.
I did hear a little bit about the whole digital currency thing.
And then the question becomes, first of all, do you negotiate with hackers, right? Because if you do, then it's going to encourage other hackers to whatever. Or do you do the smart thing and just say, well, we're just going to tell everyone that this is happening. That's going to get us more publicity than we could have hoped for. So even if you do spoil some aspects of this current season, we will have gained the publicity necessary to offset whatever losses that might create.
Yeah.
Smart business. It's all about lawyers, John. It's about the lawyers and risk management and asset valuations. That's all it's about these days. I love it.
Okay, that could be an HBO series.
But look, everyone hates spoilers, right? Like, I haven't watched the last couple episodes of Game of Thrones, but like, everyone's talking about it. It's like, okay, so I know in the last one there's like a big dragon thing, and everyone's all dragon this, dragon that. Like, okay, so
what are you talking about? There's no dragons in the last episode.
There's a dragon in the last episode, John.
Wink. Can you see me winking?
No, I can't. I can't see you winking, John.
Can't see me winking? Oh,
I can't hear you winking.
Implied.
And I can't see you because we're not on video. But there's, look, I'm just saying, spoilers exist in this social media world.
Right.
There was a death in the previous episode. I still haven't seen that one, but I know who died because then everyone's making jokes or comments about that death and blah, blah, and like, oh, this is the world we live in. So really, if these guys spoil some aspect of the show, like, is that really going to stop people from watching the show? I don't think so. It might get more people to watch the show, actually.
Yeah, the previous six seasons were in a book, and anybody who read the book knew what was mostly going to happen. So, you know, so it was out there and people still watched it.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't stop me from watching it. It's still the most exciting thing on TV right now.
Yeah. Besides, you know, the great British Cake War or whatever. Oh, well, okay. I ruined that joke. But anyway, you know what I'm saying.
I'll take your word for it.
Okay.
Cake Wars?
There's like the Great British Bake Off or something. I don't know. Whatever.
And then there is Cake Wars, though, right?
There is
That's
Cake Wars.
Two words you'd never, ever thought you would hear together.
When I was in Pasadena, we lived on the same street as the two-time winner of the Cupcake Wars.
Oh, I didn't know there was a cupcake.
They went out of business because they were on my street.
Oh, that's great.
Hey, if we paid $200 more rent a month, we would be up on a busy street with lots of walk-by traffic. No, let's save a little money over on this little side street.
Yeah, that didn't work out too good.
Did not work out at all.
Location, location, location.
Exactly. Lactation, lactation, lactation. It's all about those sexist cows. You know, drinking milk is sexist now, right? No, wait. Drinking milk is white nationalist. Eating cheese is sexist. That's what it is.
Wow.
Because only female cows can make milk.
So I have to plug into some of these cultural issues, I guess, and get myself lined up,
John,
with the right.
You're going to get fired from your job if you don't know these things.
Fortunately, I work for myself.
So imagine walking around Google with a cup of milk and like a big chunk of cheese.
And the women would leave. They would stay at home.
They would be fainting. Men and women.
So I have to work remotely. I can't be around cheese. So we have some sad news in the world of perfect couples in Hollywood.
Oh, did I leave this on the list? All right.
Anna Faris and Chris Pratt have pulled the plug.
They've gone the way of so many couples where one became more famous than the other.
And you're talking about Anna Faris and her podcast, right?
No, I was more talking about the Chris Pratt, who used to be kind of a pudgy, funny guy,
Schlubby,
who turned into an action superstar.
Who's making big bucks.
Yes.
And Anna is still relevant. She's got her TV show.
You mean Chris Pratt's wife?
Ooh. Now, it's one of those things I think that, you know, people, even my wife was talking about how everybody's responding to it. I'm like, I haven't seen anything about it other than the headline. It was on the crawl for CNN all day yesterday.
Yeah.
So it must have been a big, big deal.
Well, it's big news because Chris Pratt is a huge star.
And the thing that cracks me up is they look so happy together on the red carpet. Oh, that's their life in a nutshell, is the red carpet.
Yeah.
And they're supposed to look happy on the red carpet. They're not supposed to be throwing down on the red carpet. And they have legally separated, so they're not officially.
No, that's over.
Until, yeah.
In Hollywood, that's over.
Well, there's always hope.
Sure.
They're so happy together.
Sure.
They might get back together just for their little boy.
Yeah, my guess is no.
I would say so.
There won't be a sequel, John.
There won't be a sequel.
There won't be a volume two.
But I was so hoping for a third one because the soundtracks have been awesome.
You know what she's great in?
What was that?
She's in Just Friends with Ryan Reynolds and I don't remember the other guy. Amy Smart? Is that who it was?
Could be.
Anyway,
Just Friends.
It's not a very good movie, but it's a good movie. It's a bad movie made into a good movie by Anna Faris. She is spectacular in that film.
Is it a comedy?
It's a comedy. And it's, again, it's not that good and whatever, but overall, whatever, it's a good film only because Anna Faris is, like, you'll rarely see a better supporting performance in a comedy than that.
Wow.
It's the top 10 supporting performance. I recommend that movie to people only because of her performance.
And what was that name? The name of it again?
Just Friends.
Just Friends. How old of a film is it?
10 years, 8 years.
So it was a young Anna Faris. Youngish?
Ish.
Better than House Bunny?
Yes, it's better than House Bunny.
Okay, last but not least for extra innings and the show, Chris Brown was caught lurking in Rihanna's Instagram comments. Is this significant in some way?
Well, first of all, I just think this is like a hilarious thing in society now, right? Like people, you know, whatever, guys and girls and guys and girls, whatever, do this with their exes, right? Mm-hmm, and they want to see what the person's still up to on social media and they'll go in and sometimes you'll hear about someone like accidentally liking a photo and because they're just, you know, they're just lurking. But there's Chris Brown, a long time broken up with Rihanna in there, you know. Posting comments.
What was he doing? He was posting. So that lurking
like a fan.
Is just observing, but he's actually engaging?
Right.
Under a pseudonym or as Chris Brown?
You know, I didn't read the whole story, but you know, I didn't catch whether it was under a pseudonym.
So, but I guess the reality of all this is that, you know, Chris Brown and Rihanna are people too.
Hey, even monsters who beat women are people too.
But I was going to make a comment and I'm not going to because I would have probably been banned from the airwaves. But we'll save that for another show.
Sounds good.
Are we good for the week?
That's it, man. That's all I got.